Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future with a savings plan from Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, a meeting of the Oireachtas Climate Committee has been called for next Tuesday to address mounting concerns over blackouts and high energy costs facing households this winter. We're joined now by Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson on climate action, Darren O'Rourke, and Green Party Senator Pauline O'Reilly. And you're both very welcome to the programme this evening. You're both also members of the Oireachtas Climate Committee. And Darren, I know you've been asking for this emergency meeting to address these mounting energy supply concerns. Airgrid, Minister Eamon Ryan, the energy regulator, the CRU, they're all going to be attending the committee meeting next week. So what reassurances will you be looking for?
Well, I think I felt it was important, and that's why I made the call for the meeting to happen. And I welcome the fact that the committee has agreed and that the attendees have agreed to attend as well. I think, you know, families around the country will be concerned and are concerned with headlines such as, you know, fuel shortages may threaten the state's capacity to maintain stability. Headlines from the CRU or calls from the CRU for increased on-peak tariffs for ordinary families. You know, increasing numbers of amber alerts at summertime, you know, when demand is at its lowest. So there has been lots of speculation and lots of leaks and half leaks of reports. So I thought it was very important that we have an opportunity to question the regulator and the Airgrid and the minister, and to get as much clarity as possible at this juncture, and specifically in relation to, you know, the supply constraints that we know we had supply constraints last winter. We know we're going to have supply constraints this winter, and just what the margins look like.
Okay, because I'm sure you heard, or you will at least have heard of that interview that Eamon Ryan gave yesterday in the News at One, and he really was very clear that he doesn't expect there to be any major problems with supply this winter, that the lights will stay on. Were you not reassured by that?
Well, all he did was say that those words. You know, that doesn't provide any more reassurance. Because let's be clear, this is the same minister. He's been in office since June 2020. There was a commitment to deliver capacity in winter 2020. We didn't do it. There was a commitment to deliver capacity in winter 2021. We didn't do it. And there's no commitment to deliver meaningful additional capacity in winter 2022. And we're already having amber alerts in the summer. So really, it begs further scrutiny, you know, in terms of ensuring that supply and demand imbalance. So if we don't have additional significant supply coming on in the winter, then how are we going to manage the increased demand? And, you know, the minister pointed towards renewables. So I would ask the question, is the minister banking on a mild, windy, sunny winter? And if he is, that's a major problem.
All right. Pauline, I want to bring you in here, Pauline O'Reilly. And I'm sure, again, you also heard what the minister had to say yesterday. And he was pressed repeatedly by Brian Dobson on exactly how we're going to address any energy shortages this winter. And he talked in the long term mostly about what's going to happen over the next couple of years or the next 18 months. But when it came to the next couple of months for this winter only, he really did only talk about renewables and the energy we're going to be getting from that. So is that what we are depending on, as Darren is asking? We're depending on renewables, we're depending on a mild winter and a windy winter.
Well, look, just first of all to say that a number of us did request for a crew and Airgrid and the minister to come in, and I'm delighted that he is coming in and that they are all coming in next Tuesday, but they were all due to come before us in September as well. I think that there's no doubt but that we are facing into a challenging situation this winter, as indeed last winter. But there are a number of differences, and that is that there were several maintenance problems with power capacity last year, and those have all been fixed, and all of the major power stations are up and running. And we don't envisage that there are going to be power outages. Obviously, everybody has to plan, as indeed every country across Europe is planning for a worst-case scenario.
Yeah. But I think it's really important... I'll just bring you back to the details, just in case you might have them, because the Minister didn't have a lot of details when speaking to Brian Dobson yesterday on exactly where that power is going to come from. The only thing he could point to was a reliance that we're going to be getting several hundred megawatts of renewable power in the next couple of months. That's what he was talking about in terms of addressing this potential shortfall that we're looking at. Is that all we have? Those several hundred megawatts?
We are purchasing 650 megawatts of additional capacity, but I think it's really important to point
out
that
I'm just going to interrupt you just to clarify that, because what the Minister said yesterday was those 650 megawatts would be coming in over the next 18 months and they wouldn't start becoming available until next year. So again, we're back to the next couple of months, and the question is we're relying on here is renewable. Is the answer to that question yes?
My answer to that is that obviously renewables is part of the solution and it's the overall solution, and I would agree with you that it's in the short to medium term. But the answer to the issue over this winter, we didn't have blackouts last winter. We also had several power stations down through maintenance issues because we have very old things like Money Point and Tarbert, and those issues have been addressed and everything is back on stream now. And this is why we are saying that that the issues are low risk. That doesn't mean there's no risk. But I think that what people really want to hear about are the costs, and that's what people are concerned about. And it's a different thing entirely. Like, the energy cost, gas has increased by 14 times over the last couple of years, over the last decade. And that gas price is really the thing that is impacting.
Okay, and I do want to get on to price.
Rather than the capacity, I think people need to be really clear on that on that distinction. And we need to do more on that.
And I think price is certainly, absolutely, certainly an issue for people. But so too is any concern that there might be blackouts or that the lights might not stay on at certain points. Darren O'Rourke, I just want to hear from yourself in relation to what Pauline has said there. Nobody's saying there's no risk, but a lot of the issues that we've been facing in the last couple of years, she's saying, have been addressed. So it is now low risk.
Yeah, I don't accept that, and I think it is really important that we shine a light on the detail of this. I'm not trying to catch anybody out here, but it is a statement of fact to say that the CRU had said we need an additional 200 megawatts to get us through this winter, and that 200 megawatts will not be available this winter. So that's minus 200 megawatts. It's also a statement of fact, and I agree with Pauline is right to say that those problems at Hunstown and Whitegate were addressed. I'm not sure if the issues at Great Island have been addressed, but even if they are, we're still having amber alerts in the middle of summer, so when demand is at its lowest. So we can expect demand to significantly increase over winter. If we don't have a comparative increase in supply, then the amber alerts will turn into brownouts and blackouts. I think it's important that we have clarity in terms of what supply will come on stream. And if we don't have requisite supply, well, then we need a very clear plan in terms of demand management and demand reduction.
And I want to go back to Pauline on that thing, because you've posed, I suppose, a number of sort of clear questions. And can you address those concerns, Pauline?
Well, in relation to the 200 megawatts, I mean, that is in a worst case scenario where you have power stations down, which we don't have. And even if we had one down, we still have enough. So that isn't the same concern. I suppose I wouldn't have the same concern over that. But I'll go back to the point that obviously there's always risk associated with it.
What about the question about if we're having amber alerts now, when people aren't turning the heat on and they aren't turning the lights on as early in the morning or as late at night or as early in the evening rather. There's obviously going to be a much bigger drain on energy over the next couple of months than there has been at the moment, and we're facing amber alerts now.
Yeah. And look. I mean, it's quite technical, but the amber alerts are not related to energy demand. It is to do with the power stations themselves and the technical difficulties that are, you know, and have been addressed. But I suppose that's what I'd say in relation to that. I mean, I'm also looking forward, and we are
What does that mean? I don't really understand what you just said there.
What I'm saying is that it's not to do with the number of people who are looking for energy. that isn't the reason. So it isn't as if in the middle of winter we have more people who are looking to drain the resources. The Amber Alerts are related to the issues around the power stations and the maintenance, as I understand it. So, but, you know, I think that what we really need to do is to hear from CRU, which is why I also looked for them to come in to us, and AirGrid indeed. But we'll note that CRU themselves are putting in and have suggested a number of measures, and I think that that's really to protect the most vulnerable during that situation.
So among those measures being suggested are these tariffs in the evening. I think it's between 5 and 7 is what's being proposed, that there be higher tariffs to try and convince people or encourage people not to use energy at that time. Eamon Ryan describing this yesterday as a very good policy, something that he thinks is a good idea. Do you agree?
What I think that we really need to be doing, and I think Eamon suggested it yesterday, is to look at a windfall tax, because I do think that it's reprehensible to see some of the companies, the energy companies, making money at the moment at extreme levels. And so I would hope that in the budget we will have a look at how energy companies can actually, be putting money back into people's pockets, and that would be ring fenced for the most vulnerable.
And I know Eamon Ryan mentioned that yesterday, and then he also tweeted about it, saying this is a charge that would be implemented, but then deleted that tweet with the second tweet, which said it was merely under examination. But it seems, you know, you could make the very short leap of consciousness there to expect that Eamon Ryan seems to think this is happening.
Well, I think that other parties, the other government parties, are open to it. That's my own feeling on it. I don't have anything definitive on that. And obviously, until the budget is out, we won't know entirely. But I think, from my own point of view and from my party's point of view, I think that it's quite correct that you target the most vulnerable. And in fact, when we look at across Europe, and anybody who's been out of the country will have seen in every paper across Europe the concerns over energy prices. And actually, even though I know it doesn't feel like it, Ireland is doing better than a lot of countries, because we have put in 2.5 billion into measures to combat the rising cost, and 1,300 is into the most vulnerable families.
I'm assuming, Pauline, you or the Green Party haven't put any price or level on what level of tax you would like to see, windfall tax on energy companies at this point.
I personally haven't. I think that it's important that it's examined and that we look at really protecting the most vulnerable.
Okay. I want to go to Darren O'Rourke.
You've
made that point. Yeah, Darren O'Rourke, you've also been calling for windfall tax on energy companies. Have you put a level on it?
Yeah, I don't have it here, Sarah, but I know there was a formula worked up in the finance office, so they had a specific proposal. I'm sure it will be included in an alternative budget, and I can send it on to you afterwards, but I don't have it exactly in front of me. I know there are approaches taken in Britain and in other countries that perhaps provide a model.
I think there have been warnings from the Department of Finance that a windfall tax could further increase bills and have an impact on investment in generators. Would you have concern about that, Darren?
Well, I don't. I think particularly given the landscape and the current state of affairs, when we have very significant profits being returned at a time when costs are increasing, I think there are, you know, significant advantages, even in the renewables area. I think windfalls there that weren't foreseen in the way the contracts were drawn up. So I think, you know, and we need to talk about Corrib Gas and the amount we're paying for it and the bad deal that this state got when we initially agreed to that.
On that point, can I ask you, the Irish Times reporting today a meeting of the government's Energy Security Emergency Group, that they were warned in June that we could be completely dependent on UK gas within 4 years because of depleting gas in the Corrib Gas fields. Do you think that strengthens the argument for having our own backup gas supply?
Well, I think it can do a number of things. I think what it actually does is it really makes the case for the publication of the Energy Security Review. It really makes the case for a clear plan for the quickest transition to renewables possible. I think within that, there are uncomfortable decisions that will have to be made.
Such as what?
Think, Well, I think you always have to go for the least worst option, you know. So I know there are conversations in relation to LNG, but we're at a point in time here where we're using more coal than we ever have before.
So do you think LNG is the least worst option at this point?
I don't think so. To be honest, I think there are better options. Gas generators that can be more quickly transitioned to hydrogen, for example, need to be prioritised. But at the same time, we need to ensure that the lights stay on. And if government don't get their act together in terms of the transition and the rollout of renewables, and we see it in terms of solar, we see it in terms of wind, both onshore and offshore. We've heard from Wind Energy Ireland earlier this week in terms of the planning delays, targets being missed. They say there's only a 50-50 chance that we'll meet our 2030 targets. As the time goes on, those challenges become
all right. And I want to
better.
Get a brief word from Pauline on that. In terms of the backup, Pauline, we know we're all heading and trying to move towards renewables and greater use of gas rather than other fossil fuels to as much of an extent as possible. But given the challenges we're facing at the moment, should we be reconsidering LNG?
Shannon LNG, and I objected to it myself, and nothing has changed as far as I'm concerned. That's a reliance on fossil fuels, a very expensive fossil fuels coming from the US. It can be fracked or unfracked. There's really no way of knowing which. And also, it's more of a long-term investment. So the long-term investment, we've already contracted 3 gigawatts of offshore renewable wind, and that's more than in the last 10 years. That will be on stream. That is where the investment needs to be going.
Okay.
And when we talk about the UK, within the next 4 years, we will have transitioned a lot of our energy into renewables, and that's the direction that we need to be going. But
all right.
To be really clear, the cost is down to the war in Russia, and we are doing all that we can, but I think that more needs to be done.
All right, Pauline, we have to leave it there. Thank you both very much for joining us. That's Senator Pauline O'Reilly and Darren O'Rourke, TD.